Prophet Gimel Yutaf Tzadi. This first verse connects us through its gematria of 506 to the phrase Ahavat Hinam, unconditional love, and also to the name of God Vav Shin Resh, which relates to memories, which is really more about patterns in our lives. Kabel Rinat Amcha Sagvenu Taharenu Nora Ufrei Shayan Sintet Nun. These six letters spell two Hebrew words, Kras Atan. They can be rearranged to spell Sha'ar Katan, which means small gates. And it's a reminder to us to guard our gates, our eyes, ears, nose, and mouth, which are the entry point for the negative system. Na Gibor, Dorshe Yehud Ha, Tevava, Shamrem, Nun Gimel Dalet, Yud Kaf Shin. Nun Gimel Dalet, through its gematria of 57, connects us to the Hebrew word Zan, which means Parnassah, or sustenance. Yud Kaf Shin is a sequence that helps us take back the energy we've given to the negative side through our mistakes. Bachen Tacharem Rachamei Sitkatcha Tamid Gamlem Betet Resh Tzaditav Gimel. This sequence connects us to the Sphira of Netzach and its attribute of eternal victory. Chasin Kadosh Virov Tuha Nael Adata Het Kufet Tet Nunayan. This sequence connects us to the Sephira of Hod and its attribute of appreciation and thankfulness. Yachid Geh Ramcha Penei Zokrei Kiddushata Yud Gimel Lamed Pei Zayin Kuf. This sequence helps to speed up the spreading of the wisdom of Kabbalah during this, the sixth millennium, during this, our generation. Shavatenu Kabel Ushma Tziyakatenu Yodea Talumot Shin Kufal Tadi Yud Tav. The letters Tav that created the planet Lavana, the planet we call the moon, and the Chet, which created the constellation Sartan, the crab, and also the Hebrew month of Tammuz. Now is a good time to make your connection in this morning for the Tikkun HaNefesh. Of the Parashah of Balak, and it's titled, section 6 is titled Yanuka, which is an Aramaic word meaning the child, but it's a very unique child. Vayehi Noam Adonai Eloheinu aleinu maaseh yadeinu kodanei aleinu maaseh yadeinu kodaneihu. Patach v'yamar v'ashem holeich lifneichem yomam bi'amud anan v'gomer v'ashem zakif ta'ama v'ela amai ela v'hahu sha'ata ama ya'ut u'shpiru havat lechai tala v'ikafiyat ad hashta v'galuta v'hashta azlat v'zkifu v'resha v'uklusaha v'chedva. He opened the discussion with the verse, and Hashem went before them by day in a pillar of a cloud. That Yud-Heh-Vav-Heh, that alludes to Malchut, has above it a tuning sound, meaning that cantillation mark of Pazer is written above it, which is erect. Why, he responds, it is only because all that period, how lovely and beautiful it was for this bride, which is Malchut, who was subdued until now in the exile. Now she walks joyfully with an upright, raised head within her multitudes. This section of the Yanuka describes many different questions and answers. And this particular discussion that I'm reading this verse from within the Yanuka, he literally was a six-year-old child who could discuss Torah on the level of Rabbi Shimon. He just was so connected that his knowledge was always there and always correct and just very. Please excuse me as I'm going to answer a call. I'm back on the, well, sorry for the interruption, but it was the Ulu people who were finally trying to call in. I'm going to open up for questions. Does anybody have any questions before we start talking about the letters? You'll have to press star 6 to unmute yourself. Remember, you've muted yourself. Okay. To talk about the letters, where do you begin? The Zohar explains that the letters, God used the letters as a plaything for 2,000 years before creation, modifying the letters, changing the letters, putting them in the proper order, and the result is 22 letters, and as I mentioned earlier, there will be a 23rd letter that will be revealed through the Mashiach, at the time of the Mashiach. Those 22 letters represent, they're literally metaphors for metaphysical energies. there's a difference between, let's say, water and air. Water was created by the letter Mem. Air is created by the letter Aleph. What's the difference between them? Why were they created by these differences? Water is a different energy than air. Well, on one hand, it's liquid versus gas. But we know we can make water into gas, and we can make air into a liquid. So it's not the form that it's in, but there's an inner essence of what is represented by that concept. The letters themselves represent that. Also, when the letters in a word are in the direct order, in the order of the alphabet, meaning that if a word has letters that follow the order, they may not be all of the letters of the alphabet, because that's obviously very rare. But if the first letter of a word and then the second letter of a word follows the order of the alphabet, meaning the second letter is later in the sequence of the alphabet, and then the third letter of that word is later in that sequence, and so forth, that letter, that word, is considered in order. It's considered in the frame of mercy. When the letters in a word follow the reverse order of the alphabet, it's considered judgment. And there are words that have the mixture of the two, as demonstrated by the first two letters might be in the proper order, the last two letters might be in the reverse order, and that is indicating that both energies are within that word. But the Hebrew letters themselves represent this concept of a metaphysical power station. There are 22 of them, and each of them is unique and different. And each letter connects to that. Now, the letters themselves have four worlds, four components, four aspects. The Malchut level is the shape of the letter. And we could get lost in this discussion that I'm going to start and be very brief about, because it's difficult for people to understand it. The academic world says that Hebrew was not the oldest language, that Sanskrit is an older language, and that there is a Hebrew writing font called Paleo-Hebrew that is older than what we use in our Torah scrolls and on the mezuzot. That's what the academic world says. The Kabbalists are very clear. The letters that are written in the scrolls of the Torah, those letters come from God. Those letters are designed by God. They transfer metaphysical energy to us. With that in mind, how do we reconcile this appearance of a conflict between the academic world and the, I don't want to say the religious world, but the Kabbalists? And the easiest way to do that, I'm getting a lot of I'm going to ignore all of everybody's talking. You can unmute yourself to ask a question by pressing *6 at any time. So feel free to jump in and ask questions. I apologize to the people coming and joining us from the Ulu system. My computer seems to be I'm trying to explain or reconcile this concept of the academic world seeing the letters as not the way the Kabbalists teach it. And is there a difference? What's the purpose? Why is that happening? And I could get lost, just do a whole class on that subject. But essentially, there is a way to reconcile all of these appearances of conflicts between the two systems of good and evil. That's not to say that the academics are evil, but they are utilized as a tool of the evil, a tool to keep people confused. The Kabbalists tell us that the Hebrew letters, the shape of the Hebrew letters, which is called the Asherite script, that is the shape of the letters that God defined and described and created. And those shapes represent the energies that they channel. And in writing the scripts, most people don't realize this, but the scribes cannot just write a line, let's say a vav. A vav cannot be written from the bottom up. It must be started with a yud, which is the little hook on the end at the top, and then it must be written in a way that it creates this outline, and then that outline is filled in with lines that constantly flow down and up, meaning you do one line down and then you do a line up. And if you don't do that pattern, then the letter is pasul. This is what the scribes are taught. Now, the rest of us would never know how that letter is written. But the way the vav is made and the way each and every letter is made on the scroll is very important as to whether it's direct light or returning light, which is why a line coming down is direct line light and a light going up is a returning light. And the consciousness of the scribe drawing the letter at that moment is being injected into that letter. And that's why it's always important to know who your scribe is and to know that he is a righteous person, whatever that means, because obviously we're all human. There are four parts to the letters, four worlds to the letters. One letter is the shape itself. The next world is the sound of the letter. What sound does it make? Well, that sound, there's a bass sound for each letter, and then the vowels modify that bass sound. For example, the bet. I don't say the aleph first because the aleph nominally has no sound. I say nominally because when we discuss the aleph directly, we'll get a different sense of that. But let's take the bet. We all know that the bet has a b sound. Its bass sound is b. 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 Not B-E-E. B. It gets modified by vowels. But its bass sound is b. That sound also, the vowels have a relationship that the bass sound also, the letter has a bass vowel. What is the bass vowel of a bet? It's the two dots. The A sound, bay, bay. bet becomes bet. The third category of the letters are the crowns, the tagim, they're called. And without the teaching of Rabbi Ashlag in the Ten Luminous Emanations, I don't think anybody would understand the relationship to the tagim. The tagim, the crowns, there are letters that have no crowns. There have letters that have one crown, and there are letters that have three crowns, but there is no letter that has two crowns. The tagims are relating themselves to the world of creation, the world of formation, and the world of action. A letter that has one crown is indicating that it has a incomplete aspect in that world. The crowns represent what's called a reshimo, a shadow, an impression. It's like taking a stamp with an ink pad, and you stamp what's on the stamp onto a piece of paper. It's not exactly the same. It's not a copy. It's not a perfect copy. It's a modified copy. It's a reshimo, a pattern. The more you use the stamp, the more that shadow, that reshimo, disappears, becomes less. It's no longer as accurate. Do it 100 times, and it's not as accurate as the first time. This is true of the reshimo. And the tagim represent shadows of the letters in the higher worlds. And they indicate an area where the letter did not perfect itself. The fourth category, the fourth aspect of the letter, is called trope. And it only appears in the Tanakh, in the writings, as a little mark around a word. Sometimes there are two marks, for the most part just one trope for each word. But in fact, each letter has a trope. And it's the chanting, the sound of the pattern of the singing that comes from the reading of the Torah. Every letter has a relationship to these four aspects. Now we have the Tree of Life, and you've all heard that there are 32 paths of wisdom. But let's start to build some understandings a little deeper. There are 22 Hebrew letters, and there are 10 vowels. That's the 32 paths of wisdom. And there are 10 sephirot. We're now at 42, which is why the creation was done with a 42-letter name. All of this is built into the Tree of Life. The Tree of Knowledge, Good and Evil, is a reshimo, an impression of the Tree of Life. It's not as clear. It's not as accurate, and has left room for the potential of evil. which unfortunately Adam and Eve connected to and allowed to manifest. And that's the world that we live in. The letters on the first set of Luchot were different than the letters we have now. But the letters that we have, that we will be studying, that we will be looking at, all of those letters relate to our physical world. And so they are correct for where we are in the spiritual process. When we reach the final tikkun, the mark tikkun is the term, when we reach that, the letters will change. The words of the Torah will change. Many people have great difficulty with this understanding because they've been taught that the Torah never changes. The Torah is the blueprint of creation, and creation cannot change. But we have some unique aspects in the Torah that don't make logical sense. When a word begins with a vav, it could mean that this word is translated and at the beginning. Whatever the word is, the vav at the beginning is a connecting vav, and so it means and, or things like this. But there's also, we have the rule that sometimes that connecting vav isn't a connecting vav, but it's a transformative vav. And it
I think he's having technical problems.
Hello?
Can you
hello?
See me?
Oh, yeah,
yes.
There you are.
It went out on me for a bit there.
The last thing we heard is Bob's transform us, something like that.
Transformative Bob.
Yes.
This transformative vav is a vav that transforms the tense of a verb from past to future, or from future to past. But it changes the verb. Now those vavs are going to move. There are many words in the Torah that are missing vavs. The same spelling without the vav is an indication that that word is not complete. And so when the Messiah comes and when the correction is complete, those vavs that are transformative will change. Because we're talking now, the Torah speaks to each of us in our generation directly. So it can't be talking about the past, and so we need to understand that transformative vav is telling us this verb, while its tense is past, is really future. But at the time of the Messiah, that vav will move to a different location, maybe in that word, maybe in another word. The powers that are in the letters, the understandings that we have come from our sages, is just amazing. So we have these four levels, these four worlds for each letter. And each letter forms a word. And each word forms a verse, a sentence. And a series of sentences form a story. And the Kabbalists teach us, don't look at the story, delve deeper into it, look at the verse. Delve deeper into it, look at the word. Delve deeper into it, look at the letters. Permutate the words. Rebuild the story. Rebuild the verses by permutating the letters of a word so that we can understand it differently. I was writing about the Parasha of Matot, which is coming up in a few weeks. And I was looking at the whole idea of the first words around the title of Matot is Rashei HaMatot, which means the heads of the tribes. And it's an unusual wording of Moses speaking to the children of Israel. He didn't speak directly to them. He spoke through the heads. But when you look at the word Roshay, it really is Rosh Yud. Rosh means head, and the Yud at the end of a word means my head. So, the verse is actually saying, Moses spoke to my head. Now, is he talking about telepathic? The next word is Hamatot, and that has to be rearranged, and you'll see what I said about that when the letter comes out, when the email comes out. The point is, in Kabbalah, we take the verses from the Torah, the words of the Creator, and not just the words of the Creator, they manifest. Sound manifests those words. When we say the Hebrew letters, we are also potentially manifesting those words. We can physically manifest those words. And we can do that in a normal pattern of cause and effect, of going through the physicality. Or we can do it and manifest those words in the miraculous way. That's up to us and to our consciousness. We have a midrash, a teaching. I mentioned it last week. We have a teaching that there are 600,000 letters in the Torah, one for each of the 600,000 male souls that were counted three different times in the desert. And while the numbers were never exact, they were always 600,000 approximately Jewish men. And each of those men were married, they had a soulmate. And each of them had children, two children, 2.4 children, 7.6 children, I don't know, nobody knows. But there were at least 2.5 to 3 million people that were the Jewish nation who left Egypt. So the tradition is that each letter in the Torah belongs to one of the soul roots of those 600,000 men. Their wives complete them. That's what the idea of male and female is. Male is external, female is internal. That idea represents you have a male soul root. The internal aspect of that is the female soul root. The children come from that soul root. So there are 600,000 roots for the Jewish nation. We've always been taught there's 600,000 letters. About 20 years ago, the PCs came into vogue, came into being, and somebody wrote a program, and he counted the letters. Around the late 80s, the early 90s is when this started to happen. And guess what? There's 304,000 plus letters in the Tanakh. In the Chumash, there's only about 75,000 letters. How do we get this? Have our sages been lying to us? This is a falsehood that we cannot allow to stand. It means that our whole structure of the religion, our whole structure of Kabbalah, falls apart if we cannot explain this discrepancy. So there were two explanations that were put forth. Both of them explain it in different ways. And we always have to remember that there's 70 explanations of the Torah. One of the explanations that was put forward was every one of these letters has a space. There's a space between one letter and the next letter for every one of these 304,000 letters. There's 304,000 spaces, and in the space is the light of the Creator, the white parchment. We have a tradition of a midrash that teaches that it's black fire written on white fire. The black letters limit the white parchment. The white parchment represents the letter, represents the light of the Creator. The black letter puts a limitation on it. So in that space between the letters, there are many other letters. And so, if there's 304,000 plus letters, there's 608,000 letters, at least, because each space has its own letter potential. And that is the explanation that one group of Kabbalists have put forward, and it satisfied me for many, many years. It made sense. It followed the tradition. But I read an essay about a year ago that explained it in a different way. The essay was written by not a rabbi, the man who put forth the Daily Zohar, one of his colleagues that he also promotes, is a mathematician, earns his living as a mathematician. And he proceeded to explain and take the details. If you add up the letters, there's 304,000 of them in the Tanakh, but 75,000 approximately in the Chumash, in the five books of Moses. And he said, let's break those letters down into their component marks. Many of the letters are built with three movements or two movements. Such as an example is the Aleph that is made up of a Vav, a diagonal line, and two Yuds. So there's three components to the Aleph. Actually, this man said there's four components. Because when you look at the instructions to the scribe, he's making that center Vav, that diagonal, as two lines. So there's actually four components to every one of the 27,000 Alephs in the Chumash. And when he did a bet, there's three lines. And when he did a gimel, there's two components. And so forth. And when he got through taking the number of each letter times the component that he determined from the scribes, he came up with 599,592, leaving a difference to the 600,000 tradition of 408. And his suggestion as to why it's 408 short is that each of these 408 letters is a vav. And 408 times 6, the gematria of the letter vav, is 2448, which is the year that the Torah was given, the year that Mount Sinai manifested, the year that Moses took us out of Egypt, that Moses and Hashem took us out of Egypt. It's an explanation. Whether it satisfies you, it doesn't satisfy you. There are 70 ways to understand Torah. There are 70 ways to understand every letter. We're going to go through some of them letter by letter each week. We'll start with the Aleph and go straight through. You'll notice that of the four components that I talked about earlier, the shape of the letter, the sound of the letter, the tagim of the letter, the trope of the letter, I never mentioned the gematria of the letter. I never mentioned the letter substitution techniques. Does that mean there's six aspects? In Pirkei Avot, it describes, one of the sages wrote, that gematria and astrology are the spice of the Torah. What does it mean to be the spice of the Torah? What is a spice? Have you ever had a bland meal? God forbid you become ill and the doctor won't let you eat spices? I don't recommend it. If you've never experienced it, avoid it. If you've experienced it, get out of it quickly. Spice is what gives pleasure in this world. And that is true when it comes to the letters, the gematria and the letter substitution. Is a way for us to learn to appreciate the unity of everything. A way for us to appreciate and become in awe of the Creator and the system that the Creator created. It's a spice of Torah. But those four basic levels are the worlds of the letters. Food without spice leaves much to be desired, so we will utilize the letter substitution. We will utilize the gematria. But always understand, it's not truly talking about an inherent aspect of the letters. It's talking about a spice. I know that some of you have just joined us in the last 10 minutes from the Ubu group of people, and I truly apologize. I will forward to you the recording that came from this class so that you'll be able to listen to it separately. I apologize to you for the problem I'm having with my computer. Death says to me there's a lot of light that's going to be revealed in this class. And the Satan, you know, it's Tammuz. It is the energy. And we can appreciate it and say thank you for this energy. We can be happy because of this energy. Or you can allow yourself to fall to the negative side. The choice is yours. This is a perfect time for me to ask for donations because it's Rosh Chodesh. It's a perfect time for me to ask for donations because maybe I'll need a new computer, God forbid. It's a perfect time to ask for donations because understanding the system is what it's all about. So those of you who feel moved, please arrange to send me a donation. Remember, I never turn anybody away for not sending a donation. But also remember, it's important to exchange energy for energy. And whether you receive this energy directly by hearing the whole recording, or you'll get it by hearing the recording later, you still have received the energy. Does anybody have any questions? Does anybody have any questions?
I would like you to send the recording to MJ as well.
Okay.
Thank you.
Any other questions? I'm getting a lot of background noise, so I'm not hearing any questions. So I don't know if that means there's no questions or if it just...
Let's go in a moment.
If there are no questions, I'm going to bid you all a Kodesh Tov. It's an absolutely wonderful month. Always remember, don't worry, be happy. This is the time to avoid the disease of cancer by limiting those cancer cells in your body from exploding into uncontrollable growth. And the way that is done is by being happy, no matter what happens during the month. You've seen an opportunity this morning with the computer. There will be many more during this month leaping around. Was there a question?
I like, when's the next class?
The next class is next Sunday. Okay. Although I have classes... I have classes 10 p.m. Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursdays on different subjects, primarily reading from different sages, whether it's the Zohar, Rabbi Ashlag, or Rabbi Brandwein. I read their books, and we discuss those aspects. Starting around the 15th of July, we will be starting to teach the Sefer Yetzirah on Monday nights at 8 p.m. The Sefer Yetzirah is a book that written by Abraham the Patriarch that explains Hebrew astrology, but it also is a meditative technique, and the two are intertwined within that book, and we'll try and give you that understanding in the teaching.
What's the name of that?
I'm also going to be starting around that time teaching the Ten Luminous Emanations by Rabbi Ashlag. I'm not sure of the time of that class as of yet. There'll be an announcement in all of my classes, so you'll hear about them.
Oh, so I won't... that's good. Do you ever get into the Bahir?
I haven't had anybody ask me to deal with the Bahir. I've read it. I find the Zohar much more interesting. But okay. They're very similar. They're relating to the same approach. The Bahir is a meditative technique. The Zohar can be a meditative technique or just theological information. It's a question of how you want to perceive it.
Okay.
Are there any other questions?
What's the name of that book?
Right here.
Yeah, that the Yetzirah.
And the Sefer Yetzirah is the other book I mentioned.
Yeah.
Sefer Yetzirah in English means the Book of Formation.
What's the name of that book?
The Book of Formation.
Book of Formation. Alright, thank you.
You can get them through Borders on the, if you want, they usually have those in stock.
Well, there's a lot of different English translations of the Sefer Yetzirah. The best one that most people are familiar with and find useful is written by Aryeh Kaplan.
Yeah, I recommend that one. Kaplan, anything Kaplan does.
Any other questions? Have a beautiful Rosh Chodesh. We'll speak to you next week, if not before.
Okay.
Okay.
Shalom.
Kodesh Tov.
Kodesh Tov.
Shalom.
Shalom.